No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM. Feels just a few days because we did a preview on the trade deadline, a trade deadline special. But Voss and I are back to talk to you about some of the moves the Ravens made, the big one, a couple others that may have gone unnoticed, the current injury report, which is a pretty nice thing to talk about. But Voss, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Very good to be with you again. It's kind of exciting time of year now. We are past the deadline. We know pretty much what players the Ravens are going to have at their disposal. And now they just have to go out and see what kind of damage they can do in these games, beginning with a pretty big matchup, out-of-conference matchup coming up this week.
Yeah, kind of a litmus test here against the Vikings and a team that is in the middle, kind of struggling to find themselves too. They were a very good team last year. They've got a inexperienced quarterback, but this is a game the Ravens really need to win. They're in really good, very good shape in terms of the tiebreakers in the division in particular, but they've got to accumulate enough total wins to get into a tie. So there you go.
Well said. Well said.
All right.
Start with a couple top line thoughts from the deadline to just kind of put a button on our last show. I understand that some of the fans are disappointed that Eric DaCosta was not able to add to the defensive line or the offensive line even. We touched on quite a few defensive tackles that would have made a lot of sense. Only one of them got moved, and he was moved for a very expensive price. Yeah. So I know, you know, it's this constant dance that some people think fans are too pessimistic, so they're optimistic, and then other fans think they're being too optimistic, so they want to shine some negativity. There's been a lot of talk this week that Eric DaCosta made three trades this year. Two of them I consider seller-type trades, right? So you trade off Owe and get Gilman back. You trade off Jaire Alexander. And then you add Draymond Jones. The one thing I don't know how much we touched on in the trade deadline preview was Draymond Jones' inside-out versatility, much like a Pernell McPhee,
yeah.
which brings me back to my opinion from Monday that Jalen Phillips would have really been a nice addition, where you could have had both of them on the field in addition to Mike Green and Travis Jones and be able to hunt with four. There were a couple advanced stats that Brandon Thorne put out, the true pressure rate that had Jalen Phillips fourth best in the NFL this season, behind only Will Anderson, Micah Parsons, and Danielle Hunter. So, it's sort of a half measure, but I think Draymond Jones was a good, very good addition. But anyway, top line thoughts from you, Ken?
Yeah, so first of all, Jalen Phillips for a third was too pricey for me to trade a third, but the Eagles got a much better deal. For starters, the Eagles pick is going to be near the bottom of the third round. You start with that. So the Ravens are trading a higher pick, so they got to be much more careful doing it. Second of all, the Eagles got the Dolphins to eat a bunch of money. Now, presumably, they would have done that for the Ravens as well, and maybe even more, or you know, coughed up a pick in return because they would expect the Ravens pick to be, you know, earlier. So be have more value. It certainly could have been a value there. A straight third was way too high for me. I don't think it would have had to been a straight third based on what the Eagles paid. So the market was soft enough that the Ravens could have been involved in the Jalen Phillips discussion. It probably, you know, you never know how the Eagles are couching the deal. They may say, hey, look, this deal's as good as long as we're on the phone, but you can't whore it around to the rest of the league to right. try and get a better offer. And that's probably what they want. That's a common technique when dealing with players, particularly a free agent, mm-hmm. is like, look, the deal's good as long as you're in my office. As soon as you leave, or maybe you make one phone call to your agent, but you can't call anybody else about the thing. Otherwise, I'm pulling the offer. So you don't want to have that hanging out there. In terms of Draymond, I'm happy with the versatility. I'm happy with the player, generally speaking. I think this is a good trade in the sense that it takes a very bad player and reduces his reps and increases a position of need. So I think they didn't really have a guy who could provide anything against the run. I don't consider Draymond to be a particularly great run stuffer. He's never graded particularly well, but he is a guy who I think can help on the outside, and he could be kicked inside like Tavius could earlier this year. So, you know, it's very hard to replace Tavius Robinson, but Draymond is actually a player who comes pretty close to doing that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So when you look at the Ravens on paper compared to the beginning of the year versus now, I don't think Draymond's quite as good as Owe. Owe also, mm-hmm. for what it's worth, ranked high on that true pressure rate that yep. Bennett's going to put out. And Aloe Gilman's sort of a Chuck Clark level player. So, but they might not be quite as talented, but hopefully the pieces fit maybe a little bit better. And, you know, they can get some help from Carl Lawson, as well as potentially the return of Tavius Robinson. Let's now dive into this acquisition of Draymond Jones, because again, I'll come back. I think just the last point on Jalen Phillips, I think he could net Philly a very high compensatory pick if they do not resign him, which would have also kind of deferred the cost a little bit. But Draymond Jones, I think, was one of the very best signing or trades made during this period. And I think he may fit the Ravens sort of like a glove.
A lot of positive things. Certainly, it was at the greatest position in need. In order, outside linebacker, inside defensive line, interior defensive line, and then guard would have been the three. Draymond potentially addresses each of the top two with the versatilities. We talked about some of that. Solid pressure rate. He's got a very high close rate this year, 47% close rate. 9 of his 19 pressures have been finishes. Last year, or his career, excluding the snaps from this year, he's at about a 30% close rate. And by the way, it's a very similar situation with Owe, except it's in reverse between last year and this year. Last year, Owe had about a 50% close rate, and his pressure rate was also down for the year. This year, his pressure rate is back up, but his close rate is down. So
interesting. You know,
it's always a battle there. Outstanding size for a guy you put on the edge. He's really more of a 4-3 edge than a 3-4 edge. And yep. we'll see if he can play outside linebacker here and do some of the coverage things that are asked of him. Hopefully they'll have less, but I do expect them to have something for him. You know, he won't have zero coverage snaps. In fact, I think he had 12 coverage snaps with Tennessee this year so far.
Yeah, he came into the league as a 3-tech. He played on as a down lineman at Ohio State, and he's transitioned, bounced around to a couple teams. The last two teams both run a similar system, both come from the Mike McDonald tree, so to speak. I'm interested to see really what the rotation will be among the outside linebackers going forward. I assume that Carl Lawson will be activated. I really hope so. And that's probably going to cost the Ravens one of their special teams only guys this coming week, because there's just no really way to make the numbers work.
David Ajabo will sit. So
Ajabo will take Draymond Jones' spot, or Draymond Jones will take Ajabo's spot. But in order to get the four, you got to maybe get rid of Ali. I would say probably gotcha. Ali is the one. But how would you see that playing out as far as Carl Lawson, Mike Green? As far as I'm concerned, Kyle Van Noy should be used primarily on early downs until he shows a little bit more pass rush juice. And then hopefully the elevation or the activation of Lawson.
If I'm looking in A, B, and C playing time, and maybe D playing time too, Ajabo is going to get D level playing time. Whatever he gets, a couple snaps here or there is not going to be a big deal. I think Carl Lawson is absolutely a 100% pass rush specialist. I don't think he'll be on early downs at all. And then it becomes the big three and how you align them. Mike Green has played a lot so far this year. I don't think it's been ideal for his development. I've talked about that on other pods, so I'm not going to go over it again here. But I think we'll probably see a few less rundowns and a little better ratio of pass to run. But I don't think he gets completely out of his first and second down responsibilities either. Same thing for Draymond. Same thing for Van Noy. Is they're gonna have to figure out how to do it. Now, Draymond may play the most passing downs because of his versatility. Right now, the Ravens don't have a good second option inside, so Draymond might be the only one next to Travis Jones. It's really getting confusing with all the Joneses, by the way.
Yes, it is. I think Draymond, he should be pretty close, maybe not this week because he's still learning the nuances of the scheme, but I think he'll be pretty close to a snap leader down the stretch just because he does have that early down edge setting and third down kick inside Pernell McPhee, Za'Darius Smith type. Another interesting
– Tavius Robinson, by the way, was leading by a mile in terms of snaps, so that makes complete sense that Draymond would.
Another interesting part is the conditionality of this pick where it's tied to two benchmarks. Draymond Jones has to record two sacks for the Ravens, so you would assume he would do that if he stays healthy. But the Ravens also have to make the playoffs, which I thought was a very interesting way to kind of insulate them from giving up the earlier pick if the season spirals on them.
Yeah, it's a good double. The Ravens, I think we do best to hope Draymond Jones does as well as possible in terms of the sacks. So if they make the, if he gets the sacks and they make the playoffs, we're not going to be too upset. But there is a world where, Draymond Jones has one sack going into that final game and you try and work with that. It's not ridiculous. Draymond's out of his own league in terms of his own close rate right now. So we'll see if that changes when he comes to Baltimore. I mean, Tennessee, not a great defense by any stretch this year, but it's hard for me to say one way or another whether I expect him to have a higher rate so far than he's had. But I'd say probably more based on his close rate being higher than I would expect. I'd expect it to be lower here in Baltimore.
I would speculate that close rate is correlated to pressure from the defensive tackles that don't allow the quarterback to then get away. So I don't know if that aligns with Oway doing better when Madubuike was having a good year, and then Draymond Jones playing with Jeffrey Simmons, who's having an excellent year for the Titans. Last point, unless you had another, I do agree with the notion that David Ojabo's roster spot should be given to Carl Lawson at this point. He got an extended audition last week. He did not perform well enough, and it just doesn't seem like there's any long-term value to harvest anymore there.
Yeah, they don't have to make that decision, but it certainly seems like they're going to fairly soon. I would think Ajabo would be released. He has no compensatory value. So it's only a matter of what he can give you this year. He did play a fair number of snaps this last week. Not well, but he played, I want to say it was like 35 snaps. He played 55% maybe. If you're looking at what the Ravens had to do in their hour of need, they did at least lean on Ajabo a little bit and got something out of him from that perspective. But all the stuff about how important he was to the Ravens, all the stuff that frankly, that John was kind of throwing in the reporter's
coach
faces.
Speak.
Was really coach speak. And that's fine, by the way. Coach speak, I want a coach who will mislead appropriately. And if he's going to take the positive stance on a player, that's fine. But you realize what comes from that, there's a causality there.
Expectations.
With reporters who then want to basically read between the lines on everything you say. And that's personally my only interest in the coaches' interviews. They rarely give you a meaningful tidbit sometimes, but most of the time they won't give you anything particularly meaningful. So it's trying to read between the lines of what they're saying. Why are they saying it? And try to figure that out is what I got. So anyway, Anyway, that's not a Draymond Jones issue. That's a David Ajabo issue, which may make it a non-issue at this point.
So if you then have Lawson, Green, Draymond Jones, and Calvin Noy, and then potentially Tavius Robinson can return, that's four. So you're in good shape at four. And then if Tavius Robinson or potentially Adisa Isaac can return at a later date, that would potentially give you five. Everybody stays healthy. So that's 4 to 5 is pretty much where you want to be at outside backer, I think.
Yeah, that does it for me. And they could, if they want to be extra safe, they could have Carl Lawson do the three elevations routine and and stick it and leave Ajabo as a healthy scratch for the next 3 weeks. And that may give them a better idea of where Isaac and Robinson are in terms of their return profile. And if neither of those guys are going to be back, then I think you probably want to hang on to Ajabo in one form or another if you can afford to on the roster spot. But I'm not saying it's a, you know, it's an ideal option, but it's a backstopping option that you would have.
At this point, I'd rather see what Malik Ham and Kamarion Rucker can
true.
Do. Yeah. At this point, just because Ajabo's been given a pretty good leash by necessity this last couple of weeks and just not getting it done. Unfortunately, the injury sapped his athleticism, it seems.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, and I want to see what Malik Ham can do too. And if they could get Kamarion Rucker on the field, that would be fairly interesting and early. Ham is a third-year player. You know, he's missed two years basically to injury. And I have been reminded by a couple of people that Ham has actually played, not Ham, it's Isaac that's played a handful of snaps already. But Ham has not played. And those are the two I'm getting confused when I do this. But Ham has lost 2 years to injury, and that's cost him the he's a third-year player now. So the runway remaining is limited.
Sure. I think that segues pretty nicely into our next topic here, if you're ready. Sanusi Kane was released from the Baltimore Ravens after two consecutive inactivations in lieu of Keandre Jackson, a safety who has flashed on special teams, and he has one more year of team control. So I think that certainly factors into the decision there. I do think it's also a little bit concerning to look at what the Ravens have gotten out of their day three picks in the 2024 draft class. So Tez Walker and TJ Tampa were fourths, and they're both, you know, on their way to becoming complete contributors for the second half of their rookie contract. Rasheen Ali was a fifth, who's not really seen much action on offense. Devin Leary's been released. Nick Samak's been released. Sanusi Kane's been released. So those are 6 2/7. So I do sort of understand where some fans are coming with when they're upset with the Ravens for hoarding day three picks. But there's also many times where those day three picks turn into Charlie Kolar or Justin Madubuike or something like that. Yeah. Geno Stone, not Madubuike. He was a third. But so I think it's somewhere in the middle. The Ravens probably value day three just maybe a little bit too much, but they're definitely not worthless like some make it out to be.
I mean, their fourth-round picks from 22 were an outstanding group. In terms of what you normally get from the fourth round, to get Daniel Falele leading with that name is really great. JAD, below the line for what I would want in a fourth-round pick. But Charlie Kolar, Jordan Stout, Isaiah Likely, certainly outstanding. Pepe is the sixth of those fourth-round picks. I mean, they have had some bad picks. Caillou Blue-Kelly was a terrible pick, and they decided they'd try and sneak him through, and he hasn't done anything for anybody else. He hasn't made him feel bad. But they got Andrew Voorhees in the seventh round. They got Geno Stone in the seventh round. They got Zach Sealer in the seventh round. They got Chuck Clark in the sixth round. I mean, it's just not – there's a lot of picks in Ravens history. I'm just scratching the surface in terms of good picks. DaCosta calls them lottery tickets because he wants to project that as the way other GMs should look at it. But he doesn't really believe they're lottery tickets. He believes the Ravens have a better chance to connect on those picks than other teams do. And any sort of meaningful analysis would show you there's three teams which absolutely stand head and shoulders above the other team in terms of what they've done with their draft capital relative to the talent they got. And it's the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Packers were three of the most successful organizations over the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well established. There's been quite a few here. I mean, we don't need to go through the whole list, but Tavius Robinson in the fourth, Tylan Wallace in the fourth is a good pick. I think Isaiah Luck was really the standout there. So fourth round seems like 50-50 hit rate, fifth round maybe 40. Six and seven are getting more difficult, I think, as more teams get hip to the scouting process that maybe weren't years ago before PFF and before a lot of the scouting services improved their knowledge to the level of the Ravens.
I think one thing that really benefited the Ravens in years far past was they had the small school scouting advantage. And now with NIL money, all those guys end up finishing their college careers at a Power 5 school or Power 4 school. The most of the prospects do. Carson Vinson, a big exception to that this year, but he is atypical in that regard. Most of those guys move on.
Yes, it is. I think we made that point a couple of years ago. Not only NIL, but the transfers. So the smaller school players like Tavius Robinson are able to transfer to schools and get paid. And so six, I think you want to concentrate on the fourth and the fifth as much as you can in day three. And if you got a 50% hit rate, you want 4 fourth round picks. So you get 2 contributors out of it, right? That would be the way to look at it, in my view.
Next year's draft, okay, specifically. The Ravens need as many freaking picks as they can get. Many as they can get. They have such a huge exodus of talent that's about to occur. They're going to have to be double dipping at multiple positions, probably taking 2 to find 1 at some position. So I hope that there aren't any more opportunities really to acquire selections, but there might be something that would come up where they could trade a player before 26. A good example, I don't know that I have a good example right now.
Roquan.
Okay, Roquan has no trade value, so you can just stop that.
But
right
I'm
now.
Saying after the year, after during free agency, but before the draft, after the new league year begins, could they trade Roquan and harvest that $7 million and use Teddy Buchanan at the mic because he's obviously the defensive rookie of the month. He must be worth more than $7 million.
Okay, you don't believe it either. So in Roquan's case, he's about a $7 million number that you're referring to for next year. That's the cap saving. So the Ravens have to, if the Ravens are going to cut Roquan, they need to find somebody for $7.3 million.
I was suggesting you trade Roquan for a fourth round pick or a third round pick, and you take the $7 million and you go cheap at inside linebacker. We don't need to get into the whole Roquan spiel again, but the two best defenses this year, Denver and Houston, are both pretty cheap inside backer. I don't think you need an expensive inside backer to have a very good defense.
Right. Well, I'm with you. The Ravens have generally had a good inside backer, but I'm in favor of not drafting that and not overcapitalizing it there. So the Patrick Queen trade is one of the worst Patrick Queen acquisition is one of the worst in Ravens history, and one of the ones that really made me angry.
I think you can look at the Rams game and say Buchanan and Simpson were the two inside linebackers that game, and that defense was played very good. That may be the best defensive game of the year in terms of yards per play when Kyle Hamilton was down in the box. Anyway, just a thought as far as if you could find more trade value. Don't want to get too far off the rails.
Fair enough. Let's keep going. But, Tanusi Kane obviously had been losing ground this entire time. It looked like he was the guy who's going to be the third safety in camp. I think the Ravens kind of talked themselves into it. And you and I know both agree that the Ravens' failure to get a safety at that point to figure out who they could maybe have was a big problem. And obviously the Ardarius Washington injury, just absolutely enormous for this team.
No question about it. I'm going to save my response on Kane or my final point to address Garnett's question in the mailbag.
Okay, fair enough.
Hits on that.
Let's talk injury report for a little bit. For 2 consecutive days of nobody on the Ravens injury report, which is fantastic. It often will happen that somebody will get hurt on Wednesday and they'll be out on Thursday, but And everybody present, everybody practicing full. I haven't seen the Vikings today, but yesterday they had 5 DNPs among their roster, so that's pretty significant.
Yeah, coming off a physical game with the Lions, you'd expect them to be a little bit banged up. And 3 games on the road in a row for the Ravens here, but to have the mini bye sandwiched in there is definitely helpful. So whoever's paying witches to put positive spells on the Ravens since week 5, keep it up. It's going pretty well. The clean injury report certainly adds to the crowded roster, who's going to be activated, who's going to be deactivated. it's going to be very tough to earn a jersey in week 10.
Well, I mean, it's nature. If everybody's healthy, then there's going to be five plus healthy scratches, because you've got, if you have no elevations, you have five, and then you'll have presumably might have two elevations. Counter Jackson is up now. So I'm trying to think of who's, so we're thinking the most likely elevations this week would be Lawson. And then that kicks a can down the road on releasing Ajabo.
Yes.
And then it also, you had the other possibility would be
Taven Bryan potentially.
Yeah, probably.
Because I would say Taven Bryan or Aeneas Peebles, it would be an either or to have five defensive linemen active. But if you're adding, if you're going from three outside linebackers to four, you still have five corners because Jair wasn't active last week. You still have four safeties because you had four last week. You still have eight offensive linemen. I think it has to be Rasheen Ali if you want the fourth outside linebacker. I don't, you know, you're activating two unless you're going to deactivate Charlie Kolar. And that doesn't even include Tez Walker.
Tez comes to mind. That, yeah.
And he's not, he wasn't even active last week, which is kind of disappointing because he's outperforming Tylan Wallace in a lot of metrics this year. And I'd like to see what he can, you know, what he can develop into in the future.
I can't imagine why you'd want Ali over Walker, but I don't think that's really the question. I think the question is a further spot down, whether or not Walker can crack in over someone else.
It would be Walker versus Wallace is kind of the head-to-head there. And then the other head-to-head is Ali versus the fourth outside linebacker or Mitchell. Ali slash Mitchell versus the fourth outside linebacker.
Oh, they got to have a four. They have to have a fourth outside linebacker. They can't not do that. They could. The Keon Martin could hit the bench again, I guess, if they wanted to cut another special teams player or leave another special teams player off. They have options. I'm not saying that any of them are particularly great. But now with Humphrey back as a backup slot, you presumably you can get through. And hey, if it worst came to worst and you're two injuries down, first of all, your season's probably in a lot of jeopardy, but somebody like Awuzier could jump in and play the slot if he had to.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So we'll see. But I'm interested to see that 11:30, who's active, who's not. And I'm interested to see, what is it, 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock on Saturday, who's called up.
Because
it's definitely a roster crunch this week.
Yeah. All right. I did want to take a ride through some of the value that was exchanged in the other trades just in the week prior to the deadline. Now, we know there were trades before then, and you know, going back into September, there were trades. But in the last week, starting about October 27th, there were a good number of trades in the NFL this year, which is unusual. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Let's see, about 15 total trades. Let's just go through these really quickly in terms of what the value exchanged was. And I think we're going to see some inflated values at certain position groups, which is kind of my overarching theme in this. So on October 27th, the Tennessee Titans began their fire sale. They traded Roger McCreary, a cornerback, to the Rams for a 2026 fifth round pick.
And he was originally a second round pick, I believe.
Do you know what year?
Second or third.
Or is he a fourth year player, right?
That sounds about right. I don't have it in front of me.
Yes, he's a fourth year player. So, and not a bad cover corner in a lot of ways, and a fifth round pick. It's expensive to get corners even at this point in the draft, and he definitely deserves. He played 306 snaps. He definitely deserves to be a higher round pick than what you get for Jair Alexander. But you're kind of seeing the support value of those players there. October 29th, the New England Patriots traded defensive end Keon White and a seventh round pick for a 2026 sixth round pick. Now, by the way, when you see a six for a seven exchange, that's pretty much a six for nothing. It does give them another pick to get back, but that's not very much to receive an exchange there.
Yeah, I was surprised by this one. Keon White's had some good moments in this league. I think he still has some potential. So, I was surprised. I thought New England probably could have maybe gotten more for him if they held out till closer to the deadline.
Yeah, it's possible. Certainly, he hasn't done a whole hell of a lot as a pass rusher, and this is his third season in the league. Wasn't it 22? No, he drafted in 23. So this is a jump the gun trade too for Keon White. I mean, San Francisco is really not happy. I'm sorry, it's New England is not happy with him. Yeah. All right, got another trade. The Patriots trade Kyle Duggar and a 2027 seventh. So that's the give back pick to the Steelers for a sixth round pick. Now, it seems like only yesterday Duggar was entering the league, but he is what year
fourth
now?
Year.
Another fourth year player. No. Actually, he's been in the league for 6 years now.
Six years.
So I'm not sure where he is in his current contract, but an interesting exchange there. He was a hell of a player for his first 4 years, and then he really went down the toilet.
Yeah, surprising to see a team that's in first place in their division selling off two potential contributors within 2 days of each other before the deadline. Must be maybe some salary issues or roster crunch issues.
Yeah, could be either. Duggar the last two seasons, 467 yards on 54 targets, which is that's not going to get it done. 9 yards a target, roughly. Anyway, move on. October 30th, the Jets traded Michael Carter II, a corner, to the Eagles in exchange for John Metchie and a 2027 sixth and seventh. So pretty good return there, I would say, for the Jets. And I'm going to look up Michael Carter and see where he was in his...
Yeah, Mechie's a player that had some moments. He bounced around a little bit. I think he was traded from Houston to Philly in one of their trades that they made. Roseman seemingly makes a trade every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Tough year five for Carter so far, if you believe the PFF grading. He's not yet 27 years old. Had two bad, poor coverage years in a row. And I tend to go more by yards per target, and that does not look as bad. He's allowed 338 yards on 51 targets. So it's not great, but it's not that bad either, six and change. So that actually seems like a pretty high price for a corner, and it looks like the Eagles paid it multiple times.
Yes, they did.
And the next trade we're going to talk about, which is Jair Alexander for a sixth-round pick with a seventh returning in 27.
Yeah, good trade for the Ravens. I mean, not good trade, obviously. You wish Alexander became a ball hawk on this team. Mm-hmm. But for a player that's not playing at all, you save a little bit of cap space and you get a pick back. So we'll see what he does in Philly. I hope he's not, the light bulb doesn't come on for him and all of a sudden Philly's a juggernaut defense again.
So we've passed the trade deadline now. This has a ancillary concern for me, is that Marquise Robinson will become a bigger target for a poaching target for other teams in the league.
Yeah.
And it could be a team that traded a corner already and now they need another one, or it could be a team that is out of options because they couldn't acquire a corner. And as we know, corners get injured. So there will be further attrition and there will be further need.
The Jets obviously have a connection to the Ravens and traded away two corners. So yes, I agree with you there. I think I'd rather try to protect him if you can.
What I mean, how are you going to protect him? You're going to put him on IR, or you're going to raise him to the active roster?
I raise him to the active roster. I think you can roster six corners. I'd get rid of I'd cut Cooper Rush loose and cut Rasheen Ali loose, and that's how I would fit that puzzle.
Okay. That's aggressive, and it could certainly end up doing that. And hopefully, this is the kind of situation where they get a chance. So hopefully Marquise Robinson likes his current situation, although I'm certain he'd rather be on the active roster than on the practice squad, but he'd give the Ravens a chance to counter and get him up. They don't always do that, but players like to stay in the same city, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Draymond, so I'm not going to do that. We talked about Jalen Phillips, not going to talk about that one. It's kind of an interesting trade. The Cincinnati Bengals traded Logan Wilson, a longtime Ravens killer, by the way, to the Dallas Cowboys for a seventh round mm-hmm. pick. So basically, trading Logan Wilson for nothing.
Yeah, apparently he was benched on the worst defense of, one of the worst defenses since they invented DVOA, and he was benched. Jerry Jones apparently had a diatribe after Monday Night Football. I was asleep by then, but I heard that he thinks he doesn't have too many years on this earth left, and he wants to fix the run defense as much as he can before he passes, I guess.
I did see something that was obviously AI generated by the thing, but the real speech was
that's what I heard. I heard the real speech was kind of off the wall there.
Okay.
I don't know. Might have to go back. Maybe that AI, maybe that wasn't AI. Maybe that's just really Jerry.
Yeah, well, it was, that would be really weird.
Yeah.
Okay. The Las Vegas Raiders traded Jakobi Meyers to Jacksonville. And this is a big one. This is a fourth and a sixth round pick. That is a lot of draft capital in one trade there. We're going to get to some bigger ones, but that was big.
Meyers, a little bit divisive player. Some think he's a Jag. Some think he's a hidden gem with the Travis Hunter injury, which apparently is not season ending. They look like they needed to get something else in Jacksonville there. Brian Thomas having a terrible year after a sophomore slump year.
Mm-hmm. And Jakobi Meyers has been a heck of a receiver for years. It seems a little strange to me. He's almost 29 years old. He'll be 29 in a few days now, actually in 3 days from when we're recording this. He'll turn 29. So you're buying into the declining years, and that is a big price to pay, a fourth and a sixth for a player like that.
He's got a pretty good size contract too, if I recall. Maybe he might be one of those players that's valued more in league circles than by the general fan base.
Huh. Okay. We got another trade involving the Jets here. They traded Sauce Gardner to the Indianapolis Colts in exchange for the next two Colts number one pick and Adonai Mitchell, who I don't remember when he was drafted exactly, but it was
2 years
high.
Ago. He's a second year player. Yeah.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
On my dynasty team that I have with Alec. Yes, so he's a second-year player. This was a very shocking trade. I was always on the Stingley is better than Sauce bandwagon even after Sauce kind of had a better rookie year. Indy, every once in a while, they step up and, you know, they made that trade for DeForest Buckner, gave up a first, what was that, about 4 or 5 years ago. That worked out pretty good for him. But two firsts is pretty steep. I'm trying to pull up Gardner's contract here because he was already extended. So maybe it's a little bit cheaper for them because
it's not really that cheap because there's not that much bonus in it. So okay. I've taken a little bit of heat for this online because of this, but it's not that, I want to say it's like, let me get this. Ahmad Gardner. And yeah, his prorated option bonus is only about $6 million per year. So his salary is in 26, $5.25 million. So that's a bargain. But he's also got guaranteed salary of $25.5 million. So I'm not sure what's going on with that.
It looks like there's a his cap number in 27 looks like $21 million. So, and then mm-hmm. I guess – so, yeah, that's not a terrible number if he plays like a top 10 corner. But then 28, it goes up to 26 million, 29, 36, 30, 36. So
I think what we're seeing on OTC now doesn't include what Indianapolis is paying because that prorated option bonus should be gone.
Okay.
Unless they made a deal already, it's Indianapolis restructured already, which I don't think they did. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Let's look and see what team he's listed with. That'll tell. Yeah, he has the Colts logo.
Yeah.
Wait, who knows? But there's a chance that that's a little bit cheaper than first thought.
Okay. All right. They certainly cannot get rid of him next year because of the guarantees, but they actually they probably could get rid of him if this prorated option is really the Jets' prorated option. Okay. More research needed. We'll just leave it at that. I didn't like the trade, not just for the money of paying Sauce Gardner. I didn't like the trade for the amount of value given up for him.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Two firsts. He's not necessarily a great fit either. He's a man cover corner and going to a zone team.
Mm-hmm. Now that can change with the players. So the defensive coordinator needs to make best use of him, but still, it's an awful lot to give up. To give up, all, you know, the two number ones and a player.
Putting a lot of faith in Daniel Jones that hit that, you know, he turned into a pumpkin last week against Pittsburgh, unfortunately. You know, I guess they figure we haven't had a good team or first place team in who knows how long, so go for it. But I don't think I would have made that move.
Right. I'd be happy that the Ravens would not make a move like that. Next one down the line is the New Orleans Saints trading Rashid Shaheed to the Seahawks in exchange for the 2026 fourth and fifth round picks. That is a lot to give, folks. That is an awful lot to give. He's having a pretty decent year, that's for sure. But when you look at it, I mean, Shaheed had been a very good player when he started in terms of his yards per target number. And he's been in solid decline every single year. 14.4 as a rookie, which is absurd. You're not going to continue that. 9.6, 8.5, and 7.6 this year in his fourth year. It's definitely not the exciting player he was a while back. He's certainly the number one, you know, for the Saints, he's their top receiver. But yeah, not a guy I'd really, really excited about getting.
Yeah, I wonder how much of his yards per target decline is due to decline in quarterback play. The Saints have had a pretty tough situation there. I was listening to, I think it was Shio Kapadia's podcast, and they loved this trade. They thought he was a perfect complement to Jackson Smith and Jigba, that it would stretch the field and allow. So it is steep, but we'll see how it plays out. I mean, if they do, you know, win that division, maybe it was worth it. Who knows?
All right. Now we have the Browns traded Joe Tryon. He used to be just Joe Tryon, but now he's Joe Tryon Shoyinka. Yep. To the Bears in exchange for a sixth round pick.
Tough year for that the outside linebackers in that first round. We had Phillips, Owe, and Tryon. And Tryon's been traded twice now. They were all drafted in the first round. I think Tryon drafted one pick after Owe, and he has not had as good of a career as Odafe Owe. As much as people think Odafe Owe hasn't done enough, Tryon's been considerably worse.
Yeah, I mean, Tryon was a first round pick, and he's at number 32, so he's very comparable to Owe. But yeah, he hasn't been as good, and he's barely played at all for Cleveland this year, only 31 snaps.
I like that flyer personally. I thought last time I saw him, I think was in the preseason, but he looked like he had some juice.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a sixth round pick, so not the end of the world, certainly. The Jets made an enormous trade, trading Quinn and Williams to the Cowboys. They get a first, a second, first and 26, a second and 26, a first and 27, and Mazi Smith. Now, Mazi Smith was a big name in the draft, I believe, last year.
I think he's 2 years in, and he has not done very much at all. They made him drop weight, and then he couldn't stop the run. And, you know, as I mentioned on Monday, I think Quinn Williams is overrated. I wouldn't have even wanted to part with a third-round pick for him from the Ravens' perspective, so I think this is a pretty massive overpay. If it was Jeffrey Simmons or even Dexter Lawrence, who we mentioned, or De'Ron Payne or Tim Settle, one of those other guys, you know, I would have been willing to move. But a guy that's kind of declining as a pass rusher at age 27 is not somebody I would want to pay a bounty for.
Yeah, and heavier interior linemen, when they start declining, it oftentimes – it goes pretty fast. Now, there are other defensive linemen who can hang on into their 30s and still be effective into their mid-30s a lot of the time. Trevor Penning, one of the really interesting left tackles in that draft class, is traded to the Chargers for a sixth-round pick. The Chargers, whatever the curse of the Chargers is on their tackles right now. They've had Joe Alt hurt. They've had Rashawn Slater hurt. And that's not it. They had two other backup guys hurt, I believe. And they were working on their fifth and sixth tackles.
And I think they just ruled Alt out for the year. He came back, and now they shut him down for the year. That sort of bodes well for the Ravens. Well, they're not really chasing a wild card. So hopefully Chargers play fantastic on Sunday Night Football and hand Pittsburgh a loss.
Yeah, you know, that would be a really big concern, though, that the Chargers going up against Watt and Highsmith with the set of tackles they have. Penning was the, if you remember, was the penalty machine in college. Yep. At North Dakota, Northern Iowa, wherever it was that he played.
Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
And his brother's on the Ravens practice squad.
Yep. And I can't figure out why.
Agreed.
All right. One more trade may just beat the deadline. The New York Jets traded Jasir Taylor to the Chargers for 2028 conditional seventh. Fairly minor trade, obviously. And I guess the Chargers just figuring out what they could pick up there in terms of helping their secondary.
Just to go back to the Quinn Williams trade, do you think that the Jets requested the 27 first and the 26 second because they think Dallas is going to do better this year than next year?
Let's see. So Dallas, they have multiple 2026 number ones, right? They have their own and Green Bay's.
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't know what conditions are set upon the 27 pick in terms of whether it's one team or the other, but I would certainly want Dallas's first round pick and not Green Bay's first round pick. And yes. I thought I remembered hearing that was the case, that they got that.
Well, and Dallas is going to be in some salary cap trouble here. I don't know if they'll be able to re-sign Pickens with Lamb and Dak and now Williams and a couple, and they paid a bunch of guys with the money they saved from Parsons. So I prefer Dallas's 27 to 26, I believe.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, in terms of how that organization is run, I mean, I just hope they never really get it figured out because Dallas certainly has incredible amounts of money to allocate outside of the cap so they can always build the nicest facilities, bring in the best coaches and do that. Mm-hmm. I just hope they're continually screwed by their owner the way they have been so far.
Agreed.
All right. So that's a trade deadline. I guess we're off to end us some, maybe one more theoretical question here is,
sure,
did the Ravens really risk enough draft capital for 2025? Do you think they made every deal they could have, or do you think they, meaning that was reasonable, or do you think that they should have taken on more 2025 and 26 risk and made another trade?
I think they should have traded for Phillips in addition to Jones. That would have been the move. I'm a little bit concerned of the trajectory of the team now that Lamar Jackson is going to be in his most high paid years, while you also have a few other contracts ballooning at the same time. As we remember, the Ravens missed the playoffs for three straight years during Joe Flacco's really high paid years. So that does take a toll on your depth and your ability to have, you know, you probably lose one core player, one of your cornerstone players when all those numbers come due at the same time. So I would have preferred that. But again, they're 3-5. So you don't want to, you're certainly not going to trade a first or a second. So that's where I stand.
Yeah, I was okay with what they did. I would have rather they pick up one more guy on the inside. You and I talked about it a little bit, but I think Tim Settle would have been a perfect fit here. Mm-hmm. In terms of getting just a mid-range guy, you know, not a big contract or anything like that. And it would have been, I think that would have been a great move, but I don't know if that ever got to a discussion stage. I know that within the Ravens facility, they have a board with every team's entire roster and their practice squads. They're looking at who might be available from that standpoint. So it's they may have changed that because that used to be an analog board, like literally done, I think, with magnets on Ozzie's wall.
Like the draft board.
Yeah, like the draft board. But then I believe that probably has changed to be an electronic thing now that they can sort pretty quickly.
I would think so. It takes two to tango. You can't force the Texans to trade you Tim Settle if they don't want to trade, if they don't think they're sellers. Several of the teams that we discussed that we thought were sellers didn't trade anybody. So
right.
it's a lot of jumbo. It's a pretty parity. You know, there's a lot of teams sort of in the mix this year. So, you can't. It takes two to tango.
I just don't think the Texans are one of them, but okay. I mean, they're in third place in their division, right? Or they even last now because Jacksonville's ahead of them and Indianapolis is ahead of them, obviously by a wide margin, by three games in the standings. So
well, they're ahead of Tennessee.
They're ahead of Tennessee, right? They're in third place. So Jacksonville is one or two games ahead of them. It's Jacksonville,
they're five. Jacksonville, okay. Indianapolis is 7-2. Jacksonville is 5-3. Houston's 3-5. Okay. So I think they might have the best, most talent, but you got to put the, just like the Ravens, you got to put the wins on the board to say that.
All right. Fair enough. We got some mailbag questions today and some good ones. I thought some really good ones. So the first one is from Michael Kalake, and he says, and this is more of a comment than a question, I do not believe the Ravens can get immediate help at IDL or edge through the draft while Lamar is in his prime, let alone addressing the guard play. Do you think they have a legit shot to still get to the Super Bowl with these issues while Lamar is in his prime? Compound questions like this kind of bother me because I don't agree with the initial assumption, the underpinning assumption. The Ravens have had tremendous luck finding guards late in drafts, right, finding tackles late in draft. I mean, they've done a great job of that, of developing offensive linemen. Now, they don't have the same coach, so they may have a problem there that they need to find their new offensive line coach. But in terms of can they get immediate help at IDL or edge through the draft, I mean, sure they can. I mean, I think maybe the question Michael's asking is, because he expects the Ravens to draft late, are they unable to get a significant edge?
That's how I interpret it. Are they going to get an elite edge or interior defensive lineman? I will say elite interior defensive linemen can be found sometimes on day two. Elite edge rushers rarely fall. I think Justin Houston made it to the end of the second round many, many years ago. But both times the Ravens have won the Super Bowl, they did have an edge rusher that was drafted in the top 10 overall on the roster, Peter Bulwer and Terrell Suggs. So I think that might be a valid point, but that doesn't mean you can't trade up, and it doesn't mean you can't – who knows how this season goes? The Ravens still could have a relatively high pick if things, God forbid, Lamar has a re-aggravation of the hamstring or something else like that.
Well, Mike Green was drafted number 59 for starters, and he's here, and it's not a matter of – you have to go out and spend a pick on him. You got him. If you're talking about interior defensive line, I mean, Travis Jones was in a really thin defensive draft. I think Christian Barmore was in that same draft. So he was by far and away the top guy. And then Travis Jones is like the second or third best guy on the defensive line in that draft. He didn't go until number 76, I think, when the Ravens got him. So, you know, it's perfectly possible to find value in a defensive lineman later in the draft. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. Justin Madubuike was 71, right?
Yeah. Took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, he's a top 10 defensive tackle in this league. I don't think you can deny that. So, yeah, you could find him in the third round. At least as three tech. Maybe not the nose, but as far as three tech, top 10. Yeah, getting a top flight edge is tough. I think maybe you could reallocate some resources away from other positions to try to – spend a little bit of money in free agency there. The Ravens have let pretty much all of their edge rushers walk since Terrell Suggs. Zadarius Smith, Matt Judon, Pernell McPhee, and there's one other more
they
recent.
Signed Bowser. So
they did sign Bowser.
Yeah, so he's
but he was more of a Sam than to pin your ears back.
That's true, but he's still an edge rusher. And in fact, he's kind of the more valuable version of that, which I really liked, is that they stuck with the guy. It didn't turn out as well as it should have for Bowser here in Baltimore, but did have one big year, and then he had the whole BS with the injury they showed up with. Yeah,
it's part of their strategy. I think it's part of their strategy to go cheap at guard, as we saw, to try to fill in edge rusher with some third contract veterans. Just because that was a strategy at one point doesn't mean they have to stay with it forever. For a while, they went cheap at running back. Then they paid Derrick Henry. For a while, they went cheap at inside backer. Then they went to Roquan. It's a constantly evolving strategy. So I don't think you can marry yourself to any one strategy. You have to see what's available and what the trends are.
Right. So you've mentioned some of the biggest problems, but the biggest problems is where the Ravens are on their current biggest contracts. So they're coming up on the biggest years of Lamar, but that's not all. That's not all it is. They're coming up on big payments to Marlon Humphrey, and they're coming up to a big payment on Roquan Smith as well.
And Madubuike.
And Madubuike is gone. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, we don't know if he's going to be back. So yeah. we certainly hope so. But there's not one warm fuzzy I've gotten about Madubuike being back for 26 since he was hurt. There's not one like thing I've said, yeah, that sounds like he'll be back. I mean, not one thing like that.
I agree. But just back to the point, you can move the pieces around however you want. You have a pie of assets, draft capital and salary cap. If you really think we need an elite edge rusher, then you can release a couple players and sign one, or you can trade draft picks to pick one. You can trade draft picks for an established player. So it's just where there's a will, there's a way in the NFL.
Well, and let me say also, if you're listening to this show, you're already kind of an elite listener in terms of your willingness to talk about some of the minutia of caps. We don't even get too deep into that, you know, frankly. Right. But in terms of a lot of the franchise building strategy, the first thing you need to do as a fan, and this is you must be this high to ride, to be on this ride situation, is realize that the most important thing you do as a GM is decide where not to spend money, not where to spend money. So you need to figure out where you can go cheap, where within your scheme you can make that work, and then you have some additional fruit you can pass around other places, candy. But you can't spend everywhere. And the fans that drive me nuts are the ones who say, why can't we have extra players? Other teams have extra players, or this team does, or that team does. And, you know, they're trying to compare the Ravens to a team that has a completely different strategy in terms of going hundreds of millions of dollars in debt.
Yeah, the Eagles, $500 million in void. The Eagles have $500 million in void years.
And you know, it happened to work out for a championship for the Eagles. It sure as fuck didn't work out for the Browns. You know, in terms of how they did it. So, you know, if you got the first and 32nd, you know, franchises each doing the same thing, at least acknowledge the fact that it doesn't work out for everybody. So anyway, we move on.
Yes. I'll cue this one up. This one up from Garnet. Do you gentlemen believe it is fair to blame EDC for how the offseason was conducted, in which I believe it bled over into the season? If so, what percentage would you apply to him? Quote, he acquired a type of hybrid player that should have been a Raven in March, Draymond, because they got rid of a player they should have never traded, Owe. If they would have just picked up a veteran safety in May, knowing they needed one since they are scheme specific.
Okay, so first of all, it looks like this quotation comes from some article, but I don't know what that article is. So I assume since Garnett quoted it in his question, I think that's what he's saying. So I think there's more blame to go for the offseason than just, say, EDC, Harbaugh, the coaches getting together and talking about what they needed. I mean, a major consideration to what happened this offseason were all the injuries. And you start with Ardarius Washington and how, you know, that came at the wrong time in terms of what was doing. It wasn't like they couldn't address it at safety, but they, you know, They tried with internal options. They tried with the draft, and it didn't really work out for them entirely. They, you know, they thought Sanusi Kane was going to be more than he was. Let's start with the safety position for first, because I know you and I are very aligned on that.
Yes, I definitely agree that they should have added a safety. They could have traded for his name's escaping me all of a sudden, Alohi, without giving up OA potentially. Or they could have traded for a different safety. It wasn't like that was the only option to get a safety of that caliber. You want a veteran next to Malachi Starks, definitely understand that. A guy that's not going to make mistakes, it's going to be assignment sound. But you could have done it. I think, and when you start saying what percentage you apply to him, now that really gets into the silos to me. The silos of responsibility and control. So John Harbaugh seemingly has 90% or 100% or a very high percentage of control over the coaching staff, but he definitely has a larger input, I believe, on the player acquisition than DaCosta does over the coaching staff. And I think that bears out in the draft when we see many of the day three picks are sort of handpicked by the coaching staff, Harbaugh, as well as some of the assistants. I think that also plays out in the trade deadline. As Harbaugh says, he talks to EDC every day about it. And speculating here, this may have been a situation where Harbaugh liked Sanusi Kane, probably because he's performed well on special teams, and said, we're going to be okay here, Eric. And that's why Eric didn't make the move. That's speculation. But as far as assigning blame, without knowing who has the final say, you can't say it's EDC's fault or it's Harbaugh's fault or whose fault it is.
And it doesn't have to be one of the two Ravens executives for it. It can legitimately be a fact that the Ravens had some terrible injury luck, because they certainly have across their defense this year. The clean injury report is the biggest pile of crap that, you know, there is when the Ravens have seven guys on IR already on the defense. And it includes, you know, outstanding players like Matt Ibike and Tavius Robinson and whatnot. It's not anything they can really live with. So yes, I think if I had to say what I think probably happened, I think EDC probably was not strong enough in his belief that the Ravens need an extra safety. And there is an area where Harbaugh or might have said, I don't want to play Hamilton close to the line of scrimmage the whole season. We got good results on the back end. I want less risk. You know, this is where I see him playing. And they didn't go get one for that reason. You know, I think as a group, we really hated that. But the guy that they picked up, which tells you that they probably decided that before the season started, was Jair Alexander. If you get both Alexander and Awuzie, you go four deep at defensive back. Doesn't sound like you're trying to play two corners, 40 the corner. Doesn't sound like you're trying to play two corners per play with Hamilton.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, that was the elixir to solving the defense last year, was putting Hamilton deep. This year was bringing him close. Mm-hmm. So I hope they deploy him closer. Because to earn that big contract, you want him closer to the action, making more of an impact. Just another thought could be that they were burned by Eddie Jackson last year.
Yeah.
And they said, and I don't think that's necessarily a good process to say adding a safety didn't work out next year, so we're not this year. But that may have just been in the back of their minds and had tipped the scale one way or another.
I mean, it's not just Eddie Jackson they got burned by, because they got burned by Marcus Williams as well. And you know, they'd spent a lot of money, and you want to know who else they got burned on? Earl Thomas. So you know, it's not like it happened one time. They decided that they wanted to try something different in terms of developing their own safety. And the Ravens have very good success if you go back far enough. They drafted Dwan Landry in the fifth round and made him a starter immediately, and he had five picks his first year.
Yeah, he was great.
They drafted Geno Stone in the seventh round. That worked out. They drafted Chad Williams in the sixth round. He became a terrific dime back. They Ralph Staten, if you go back far enough to 1996, seventh round pick, had an impact player during his couple of years in Baltimore. I understand the reason. I mean, Ozzie always had real success drafting safeties, and I understand the desire to do it that way. They didn't take a second safety. They took two corners in the sixth round, but they didn't take another safety in the draft after Starks, right?
No, they didn't. And they ended up with Lowry as a UDFA gem who didn't last. I think the lesson to be learned is, if you're going to plan on starting a rookie safety, have a veteran there beside him so that you can deploy Hamilton in different ways depending on how the season unfolds. Right. Because, you know, even if it was a Chuck Clark or what was the guy that had all the played like the full game in the preseason, who was a veteran 2 years ago, just a steady presence. I mean, you're not looking for a Logie Gilman.
Daryl Worley. That's the
yes,
guy, I think.
Yes. Because I think that if not, you could have said, well, we're going to put Starks and Lowry. If it was one of those guys was a rookie and one of them was a veteran, you probably could have got away with it. But the issue was having two rookies back there prevented them from bringing Hamilton closer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then even in Kane's case, he wasn't a rookie, but he's pretty close to it in terms of not having any NFL playing time. So Chuck Clark is a name that I would have been happy to see back in Baltimore. I know he hasn't had a great year for Pittsburgh, but he would be a guy who
you mentioned him. You mentioned him several times in the summer.
Yeah,
hat tip there.
Fair enough. Let's go to the last question here. By the way, great question, Garnett. Thanks for contributing that. Cars ruin cities. Another good question here that I'm not sure we're going to be able to easily come up with an answer for. The Ravens, I think he's saying the Ravens have the sixth highest composite score ranking. Books give them about a 5% chance of winning the Super Bowl. I think it's about 2% on FTN right now. So that's the Old Football Outsiders. How do you rationalize these high ratings of the Ravens compared to what we see on the field every week? A volatile offense reliant on explosives and a hamstrung defense.
That's a tough question to answer. I mean, obviously, the books are not based on what they think is going to happen. It's what's going to make them profitable. So there's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of a difference there. Once in a while, they'll have a line where I think they try to get one over. But for the most part, they're trying to get equal action across the board and just collect the VIG. So I think that might explain it to some extent. I also think Lamar Jackson is a tremendous player. And I think having an explosive offense is a good thing. You know, some folks think that the way the Super Bowl is run the ball and play defense. But if you look at the last 10 to 12 years, there's been a lot more explosive offenses and opportunistic defenses that maybe give up some yards. So maybe if they can get to that and get to three turnovers like they had last week and get a couple turnovers every game, and Lamar's on track and you have a really good receiving core and you have a lot of weapons across the board, they could definitely make a run. I think the key is having a defense that can get off the field either by way of sacks or turnovers.
Okay, so I'm first of all, I'm with you on the defense, and I think they've got a real chance for defensive improvement down the stretch. I've seen, you know, one of the things, and I know Zach Orr is not a fond name right now in the Baltimore community, but I've appreciated the changes he's made that maybe the only ones available to him, but have been actually very aggressive changes. Moving up Hamilton to slot corner isn't just moving up to play in some big nickel formations. They did not play a single snap of standard nickel any of the last 3 weeks. I can't even tell you, as someone who studies, you know, defensive formations regularly, they've never done that before. I don't know if they've ever done it in a single game, but they definitely never done it for three straight games. I mean, it's just, and the only time that they've had Humphrey in the slot has been when they've been a dime, and Hamilton is a massive change. The whole thing playing uncovered nickel and having Urban be a central part of it, I mean, that really worked out. And also, it's not just a matter of Urban. It's using Buchanan and Hamilton as an edge in those situations. They didn't have a second interior pass rusher to go with Travis Jones. They did some things with their kind of Mickey Mouse things, I think. But it's an attempt to try and solve what may be a Kobayashi Maru scenario here. You know, that they're putting him on the Simpson, rotating him around the line of scrimmage, moving around the line of scrimmage, trying to find a pass rush gap for him. Mm-hmm. Not ideal. You'd rather have somebody standing up and you know, taking on a body. They did more sim pressure. I mean, here's what I'm going to say. The injuries were what the injuries were. They've decimated the Ravens defense in particular more so than the offense, which has actually had some reasonable continuity. The one big factor is that they lost Lamar Jackson for three straight games when, you know, you can't do that.
So, yeah. I mean, the Ravens have injuries other than that. Increases their talent, and other teams have injuries, and that increases their talent, right? Didn't Buffalo just lose their three tech last week, I think, for the year?
Okay, so, Buffalo didn't lose Josh Allen.
No. I'm saying looking forward, if Lamar's okay, healthy, and yeah, in the beginning of the season, you had a star-studded defense, but now you lost two guys. But then in the playoffs, you're playing Buffalo, and they already lost two of their better guys, too. You know, it's not like the Ravens are the only team that's going to have to overcome injuries. Other teams are also going to have to overcome injuries.
Yeah, fair enough. And the Ravens situation is unusual for this time of year in that they're not sitting on a bunch of injury bubbles. Now, they are sitting on injury risk at a lot of positions, and a lot of teams have that. You know, if this team lost Hamilton or Wiggins, in particular on the defense, they'd be absolutely decimated. If this team lost Lamar Jackson again on offense, or Derrick Henry on offense, we haven't talked about that ever, they wouldn't be able to compete, you know, under those circumstances. But they're not sitting on a bunch of, like, guys who are playing hurt right now. In fact, the injury report being clean is really nice. And they have about three guys that might return and really help the team. Tavius Robinson and Ardarius, they're both pretty late returns. But if they are able to return, then they might really be able to help during the playoffs.
Yeah, so beating the Bears at home and the Dolphins on the road isn't something that you want to, pound your chest about. But they have the Vikings this week. Then you have Browns, Jets in a row. Neither of those offenses are doing much of anything. Bengals twice, Packers a couple games. I mean, none of the offenses. I would say the Vikings and the Bengals are the two, and the Patriots, because Drake May is playing very well, are the most impressive offenses they will face the rest of the season. And if they can keep this up, they should really have a puncher's chance in the postseason, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not down on their postseason chances, but I'm fine going into the postseason as the 2012 Ravens did, as a big underdog and overcoming, you know, a 9-point game and a 7.5-point game on the road. The 2000 Ravens, 2 6-point dog games on the road after they've been the most dominant defense of all time. And they got through that just fine. So make the tournament, see what happens from there. And maybe it'd be nice to be the underdog for once.
The one point I'll make about the two championship runs in 2000, the Ravens went into Tennessee and beat them during the regular season. In 2012, they beat both the Patriots, and they had a very impressive performance against the Giants late in the season. I think it was their only win. Those were the two Super Bowl contestants the year before. The Ravens have not beaten much of the good competition this season yet. The good competition on the remainder of their schedule, they're probably going to have to beat in order to make it to the playoffs. So that's what I would really like to see to give me tremendous confidence.
Okay, well, they'll probably have that, and they may or may not be able to beat, say, New England and Green Bay on the road in particular. Right. But they're going to have to do well against the divisional foes, and some of those teams, they might not all finish at 500. But the last 2 years, sure as hell, has not been a problem for the Ravens to beat good teams. They've had the two highest win totals in NFL history these last two seasons of wins against winning teams.
Yep, very true. Very true.
All right. Always a pleasure doing the show with you, Voss. Lively show here. Obviously, we're wrapping up the trade deadline. If you haven't listened to it yet, maybe go back and listen to our trade deadline special, because I think there was interesting stuff said there about you know, some players who might have been available and whatnot. But tell folks where they can talk football with you online and what else you have going on.
Yes, I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata. That is spelled V-A-S-I-L-I-S-F-I-A-M-A-T-A. Fiamata is the name of our new restaurant concept that we opened up about 9 months ago now in Finksburg, Maryland. I encourage everybody to check it out and consider us for your private holiday parties.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. We have a Thursday game coming up on Thanksgiving. After that will be the next really good opportunity to go any film study shorts. Hit me up if you want to be on something like that. Otherwise, like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, and please pass this show along to that one person who hasn't heard of it yet. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.